Hey everyone, Josh Nason of WrestlingObserver.com here, and if you're hearing this, you're listening to a free show. What a lucky person you are. So why, with all the free content on the internet, would you ever subscribe to a site like WrestlingObserver.com? Well, I'm going to tell you a couple reasons why. You get access to shows like this one every week, and plus multiple editions of shows like Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as the Brian, Vinny, and Craig show, in addition to a ton of niche programming that focuses on Japanese wrestling, classic wrestling, mixed martial arts, and more. Get access to thousands of hours of audios the minute you subscribe. I don't think you could ever listen to the amount of audio that we have currently archived on our site, maybe if you live to be like, you know, 300 years old or something. But that's not all. From your very first day, you also get access to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, something that I call the Wall Street Journal of Professional Wrestling and Mixed Martial Arts, written by the aforementioned Dave Meltzer. You get not 10,000, not 20,000, but 30,000 words every single week on subjects that you want to hear about, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You also get access to every edition of Figure Four Weekly that takes a different look at the topics in wrestling and MMA every single week. And with all that, you get this for as little as $10.99 if you want to do a single month. Or if you want to do a year subscription, you can get as low as $9.99 a month if you subscribe for a full year. Just think of all the things you waste money on every single month. I spend money on all types of stupid stuff. But why not pay for something that you actually will love? Try a subscription at WrestlingObserver.com today. I guarantee you won't go wrong. Hi, everyone. Welcome. It's Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website, former writer for Bloody Elbow, Bleacher Report, Fight Magazine, and the list goes on and on. A bunch of websites that no longer exist. Hope you guys are having a great week and are ready for International Fight Week. This is the second of two shows dropping on Friday regarding this weekend coming up. We have a Tough 25 finale show happening Friday night, being tonight, featuring Michael Johnson and Justin Gaethje. We help preview that show with Paul Fontaine of WrestlingObserver.com and also MMADraws.com. You can find that on our website. You can also go to bit.ly/JNPO-70. But this episode is 71, and we're talking about UFC 213. So whenever you're listening to this, which will be on probably Friday or Saturday, we'll have a little bit of talk about the Tough 25 finale, but mainly focused on the pay-per-view Saturday night and headlined by a women's featherweight title fight, an amazing middleweight title fight coming up in the co-main event, and a lot of other intriguing things as well. So helping me break that show down is my old buddy, Spencer Kite of UFC.com. He's also written a bunch of other sites, and he was an early guest on this show way back when. So he stopped by for about 40 minutes, and we basically just shot the shit about the show. Talked a little bit about kind of the main card, a lot of the interesting nuances and storylines going into the show, what we're hopefully going to be talking about on Monday morning coming out of this big weekend, and everything in between. So I think you guys are going to enjoy this. Again, if you're looking for a full preview of Tough 25, obviously go back in the archives. You can look for the Paul Fontaine show. But if you're interested in UFC 213, this show is for you. So we're going to kick it off with Spencer Kite of UFC.com on Josh Nason's Punch Out. Well, longtime friend. He is he's my best friend in the whole world. I think people should know that. He is on the line right now. He's a guest, an early guest from Josh Nason's Punch Out, and actually a guest even before that from other shows I've done and all that. We welcome, he's a MMA journalist for Province Sports up in Vancouver, and also a features writer for a website you may have heard of, UFC.com. He's the one and only E. Spencer Kite, returns back to JNPO. And Spencer, we're just talking about you know, being real estate magnates and all that good stuff. So we'll start with the real hard-hitting questions. I asked my guest from earlier today, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back. It's good to talk to you again. friends from way back, friends, and we sort of lost one of our friends from way back, a guy that you ran a site with for a little bit. Yeah. Shout out to MMA Madness back in the day. Rest in peace to a real good dude, Brian Levick.
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad
not to start it on a downer, not to suck the life out of this right away, but got to give a shout out to B. He was, he legitimately was one of the good ones. I don't know anybody that has a bad word to say about that dude. Helped a lot of people. Going to be missed.
I am glad you brought that up because I had completely forgot to bring that up. My show I did previewing tonight's being Friday's show with Paul Fontaine. I completely neglected to bring up Brian Levick. So because with our site, Dave Meltzer lost his dad, and that was just a kind of in focus on our site. But with Brian Levick, you're right. So Brian was a for those that don't know. Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, by the way, not if you're kind of looking for how to contribute and so on. We'll include a link in the show notes. But he was a guy that was a writer for a long time, more features and doing some interviews and so on and so forth. And he had done this forever. A site we used to work a little bit with. We thought it was going to be really big at the time, and I think the idea was good with MMA Mattis. It was you and I think John Stone was part of that, and also some other guys as well. A lot of various conference calls, but Brian was, Brian was part of that, and we would, just talk about ideas and talk about all this stuff. And he was always, the thing with Brian, and he unfortunately passed away a couple weeks ago due to, I believe, it was a heart issue. I believe, if I remember right, seeing that online, just one of a sudden thing, really sudden thing. And he had, he was just always, and you allude to it, always so positive. Just always. I just remember like. He just loved MMA. He loved whatever he was doing. It was just really just, never really seemed to have a down day. So it was really unfortunate to recently hear of his passing. He leaves behind a young child and a wife. And there's it was a Kickstarter started by the Titan Fighting, which everyone I'm sure is listening to this has heard of. They started because what he was doing some PR work and doing some other things for them. And, it's just one of those guys that it's a name that a lot of us have kind of been doing this for a while, I've heard of, and someone that I'd love people to contribute to that fund and help his family out. And when I heard that news, it was really sad. It was one of those things that you lose track of people. And all of a sudden, like, oh, so-and-so passed away. It's like, oh, it's just the worst. So I'm really glad you brought that up. He was a great guy, and definitely he'll be very missed.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that just always wanted to help you however he could. Yep. Didn't necessarily demand anything back from you. If there was a way he could help you out, he was going to do it. He and I got to reconnect a little bit in the last sort of, 18 months before his passing, doing some work covering Titan for Fight Pass, doing previews, stuff like that. And he was doing PR with them. Through sort of what he had shifted into in the second half of his career. And so to see that, I was actually out for breakfast and shopping with my wife, and just, she was trying something on. So I did what all husbands and boyfriends do when you're sitting and waiting, you fire up Twitter and saw the tweet, and it just floored me, man. Brian, he was such a dude. As you mentioned, there is a GoFundMe page out there. Check it out. He does leave behind a wife and two kids. And so it's a tough one. He's a good dude. He's the kind of guy that, I'm happy to have known, and I'm better for having known. So shout out to B. We will miss you, sir.
Well, you know what Brian would want is he'd want us to talk about fights, because that's what
he would want
about.
Us to talk about face punching.
He would. He certainly would. So we will do that. So we are, earlier we talked with our friend Paul Fontaine, who helped preview tonight's show being Friday, the tough finale, tough 25 finale. But I want to give you the chance to, let me give you 60 seconds, 90 seconds, whatever. Give your overall thoughts on the show happening tonight. And kind of what your feeling is, where the big story is going to be coming out of tonight's show.
I think people kind of get down on some of these FS1 shows and these fight night events, but I really like these tough finales. I mean, not so much because it's a tough finale. It's nice to see that they're they're not the old, they're not your grandpa's Ultimate Fighter finales where it's the entire cast fighting each other. And you're like, I didn't watch the show. I don't want to watch all of these guys compete. I think this is a really good card. I'm interested to see how Aspen Ladd looks while she graduates to the UFC. Angela Hill is somebody I think everybody continues to sleep on at strawweight just because the UFC results aren't there. Then you go and look at who she fought and it's like, okay, you wouldn't necessarily expect her to beat Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas, and Tisha Torres. It's been a tough road for her. I like some of the kind of not, I don't want to say prospects in the like 22, 23-year-old sense, but some of the newer guys, I'm really interested in the light heavyweight fight between Jordan Johnson and Marcel Fortuna. Mark Diakasey looked phenomenal his last fight. I like the matchup with Drakkar Klose. I think it's one of those interesting ones where it's like, okay, we're going to find out right away what Diakasey's wrestling is like, what his takedown defense is like, because Drakkar Klose is a dude that's going to close the distance and try to put you on the ground. John Crouch has been singing his praises for a long time. And then the main event is just a demolition derby, and who doesn't look forward to that? Justin Gaethje, if people haven't seen him, he is so much fun to watch. The best part about Justin Gaethje's style is that he understands and accepts that it is going to go horribly wrong for him at some point, and he still embraces it. Like, he'll be the first to tell you, I'm going to get knocked out in the next 5 or 10 fights. So be it. I'm not changing. This is who I am. We're just going to roll with it. Michael Johnson is a very tough test. We'll find out right away where he fits in the lightweight division. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yep, I am as well. I am as well. So that comes up Friday night in FS1. Obviously, you can hear the full preview. Paul Fontaine and I did on WrestlingObserver.com and Josh Nace's Punch-Out. But we will flip our focus, my friend, to UFC 213 coming up on Saturday night as part of International Fight Week, a week in which, you know, there's not a cavalcade of stars when it comes to, you know, the our typical thoughts of the John Jones types, the Conor McGregor types, Ronda Rousey's, and so on. But this is an interesting card, a solid card, I would say. Obviously, heard a little bit by Cerrone and Robbie Lawler being pushed off to this mega fight event that's coming up later in the month with John Jones versus Daniel Cormier too. But I'd say for a main card pay per view, this is a solid show, and I don't know if it's going to really appeal to the, you know, maybe the casual MMA fan, but as far as the hardcore MMA fan, there seems to be a lot here to a lot of storylines and interesting twists and turns coming up on Saturday night.
Yeah, there's a lot to like. To me, it's very reminiscent to UFC 211 in Dallas. Stipe Miocic defending his title. You want to get Jacek defending her title. A bunch of good fights featuring established names before that. As you mentioned, losing Lawler and Cerrone is always going to hurt. I'm not all that fussed about losing Cody and TJ because I know it'll get rescheduled and I know we'll see it at another point. And I like the fact that Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko are getting the main event. To me, they deserve it. They deserved it all along. Amanda Nunes went out and beat Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey in the first round, in back-to-back interviews that did over 1 million buys. I know that wasn't specifically to see her. I know she's not the A-side in either of those pairings, but you have to reward that. She did the work. She looked dominant in both of those. And to me, it didn't necessarily make sense to station her behind Cody and TJ coming off tough, which, yes, we know there's the rivalry. We know there's the heat. We know it's easier to sell because Cody's going to say a bunch of crazy things and TJ's going to laugh at him. But this to me is the better fight. This to me is a lot more interesting because we have that first fight to look at too. And that's going to make, you know, to me, that has made this week and the breakdown of this fight really interesting is just seeing where people fall and how much weight they give to that first bout and top to bottom. I love this main card. It'd be better, of course. You're never gonna tell you that it wouldn't be better if Robbie Lawler and Donald Cerrone were here. Right. But we'll see them in a couple of weeks' time anyways. So this is a great card to me, and I hope more people tune in that I have a feeling will, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, so I'm interested in, so I guess we'll start from Amanda Nunes. So she's done everything that you'd want a champion to do, is be dominant against the best possible competition that she can go in there with. And she is a fiery personality. I love that there's an angle there with her being an openly gay fighter. I think that's a great thing, and I think that's something the UFC has really struggled with in appealing to the appealing to that community, and in terms of saying, look, we have all these other major sports, you know, hockey and basketball and football and baseball. Being gay in those sports just doesn't exist in terms of being open, and it's just a big conversation piece that really hasn't happened yet. And you have the sport in fighting, which typically seems very masculine, very aggressive, all stuff. And you have several openly gay fighters, and Amanda Nunes is one of them. I think they've kind of struggled with that and kind of getting her over that hump in terms of, you know, having her be a link to that community. And perhaps we'll see that more often. I just really haven't felt it, you know, this week. But when she gets in the cage, she is a complete terror. Again, she defeated this megastar in Ronda Rousey, and then goes in here against Valentina Shevchenko, someone she's faced before and is trying to get some heat with. And, you know, I wonder, kind of coming out of this, like, what is she – if she goes in there, rips through her in, like, a round or two rounds and just is dominant, like, what is it going to take for her to kind of really get over with the fight community and be like, she's a must-watch attraction? Is it similar to a – Demetrius Johnson, where she just needs a tough fight, better competition? Or is it going to be kind of one of these things where maybe people just latch on and they're like, she kills people and that's good enough for us? What do you think?
I mean, I don't know how much better competition she could, if she goes out and wins here and goes up 2-0 on Valentina Shevchenko, I don't know how much better competition she can beat. I mean, Ronda Rousey was a dominant force. Misha Tate was kind of the silver medalist for a long, long time. Valentina Shevchenko beat Holly Holm already. She has looked really good, beat Juliana Pena. And so if she goes back to back to back against these three, she's already got a win over Sarah McMahon. I don't know that there's any greater competition for her to beat, for people to point to and go, oh, this is the fight that she needs. So in that regard, I think she ends up kind of being in that Jose Aldo position, which I've always felt is kind of unfortunate. And I wrote about this during the week leading up to it. And one of the comments that I got on the piece and one of the conversations that started having with a guy was just, you know, he said, Americans don't necessarily want to see a Brazilian go out and just wreck shop, like, especially against American fighters. He also mentioned that her sexuality and English being her second language are probably barriers for a lot of people. I think that's sad, but I think it's probably also true. I mean, you look at a guy like Jose Aldo, who for a decade was the greatest featherweight in the history of the sport, beat everybody that you could ask him to beat, and did it almost always in dynamic, impressive fashion. And yet he never really quite got over because he didn't speak a lot of English. He wasn't out there talking trash and things like that. And maybe the performances weren't the ones that we got during his WEC days, but they were still dominant. I mean, you see the way that he beat Frankie Edgar last summer, and then you watch Frankie go out and do what he's done since. So it's like, if that's, and that to me is like Nunes here. If she beats Valentina Shevchenko and wins decisively again, to me, there's not much more she can do performance wise. And if we're still going to stick to, well, she's not American, well, she doesn't speak English that well, so we're not going to support her, we're not going to promote her, that's a misstep to me, because at a certain point, you have to just say, these are the best fighters in the world. These are the people we're going to push. Because when you stray from that, you end up getting in these situations that we've seen the UFC encounter a bunch in the last few years, where they're handpicking individuals that they want to market, that they want to promote, that they want to say, here, pay attention to this person, but they don't have the skills to back it up and to be consistent and challenge for titles. And at the end of the day, that's the group that you need to promote, is the people that are going to be main events and be the best representation. So I think she's kind of up against it. I think that sucks, but that's just the position she's in. So hopefully the UFC can figure out a way to court some new audiences and as you mentioned, promote her to some different groups. I mean, it's strange to me that there isn't a bigger push with the LGBTQ community. But you know, if she wins, you get another opportunity to correct that, improve that, adjust that going forward.
So you bring up a few interesting points. When people say, like, there's, you know, the person's not American, they don't speak English that well, or they just don't translate, I think of Anderson Silva, who did not speak, who just, you know, was very selective. He obviously knew English as he went, but was very, you know, very choice in terms of who he spoke it to and how he spoke it and so on. I think of guys like GSP, who spoke, you know, he spoke English, but not exactly perfect English, and did it in a way that was really endearing to people. I think of guys like the Korean Zombie, who was very pushed really hard. Right? I mean,
let's be honest. The Diaz brothers don't speak great English.
Right. I mean, so I think...
God bless them, but they don't.
Right. So I think there's, you know, when people say, and look at, like, in a boxing, look at guys like Canelo Alvarez, and just certain, like, yep. they just don't speak that. I think it's just there's something there which just, it's not a... There's just not a connection point yet for whatever reason. And some fighters will never have it. Some fighters will have it right from the start. It's one of these mystical things that people just – it's hard to kind of figure out. The reason that, you know, Conor McGregor hit was a little bit of UFC promotion, of course. But there was this mix of the in-cage ability, the promo ability, the fact he's an Irish fighter. There was just something that just kind of hit with certain segments. When GSP hit big, there's a reason that he just became this kind of larger than life figure. Anderson Silva, all these guys, Mike Tyson back in the, it's just there's just certain elements that it clicks and other people latch onto it. So with Amanda Nunes, it's to me it's just there's something. I think part of it is that I don't think we are finished with the Ronda Rousey story yet, and I think that people were kind of hoping for a comeback because they like to be. Hater or lover, they love to be kind of have an opinion on the story and be part of the ride. And I think with Rousey, they weren't kind of finished with that ride yet. So all of a sudden Nunes comes in, just decimates her. They're like, okay, we're still kind of wondering what's going on with Rousey, but I guess we'll kind of pay attention to you. And I wonder, like, you know, the 135-pound division, I'd be interested in seeing this next year, assuming Nunes wins, like, you know, who are her next contenders? Where are they trying to build that from, and where are we at a year from now? Because it seems pretty clear that Rousey's not coming back anytime soon. So this is really Nunez's division, and if they can, you know, everyone's so focused on 145 trying to figure out do they need a women's featherweight division. I think 135 needs a lot of attention as well, a lot of upkeep.
Yeah, one of the good things about the, and I think you're 100% right about the, we're not quite done with Ronda yet. You see, she was on Kelly and Ryan this week, and it became a bigger story than the fight itself. And, you know, we're writing more stories about we being the royal we, not you and I specifically, about the fact that she got robbed, and yet there's two events this week. So we're clearly still fixated there. One of the good things, and one of the things that I think is going to help Amanda Nunes in that, is that she understands it. And I spoke to her before this event and asked her about that, because we had spoken before the fight with Ronda, and she was upset. She didn't like the fact that the promo was, you know, that 3-minute glossy TMZ promo mentioned her twice and showed one little picture of her. That didn't sit well with her, understandably, but coming out of it, she has said, like, look, I get it. It's going to take some time. People are going to still take time to accept that I'm the best fighter in the world, that I'm the champion, that I'm not going anywhere. So let them doubt still, let them be critical, let them wait. I'll just keep going out and wrecking shop. And so I think having that mindset, as opposed to the, like, hey, give me my attention now, look what I've done, kind of that animus towards the audience, is going to serve her well. I agree with you too, that 35 is in a weird place going forward. Get a victory, that's two wins against Valentina Shevchenko, which kind of takes her out of the mix a little bit. Yeah. Holly Holm had that nice win over Betch Kohea, but, you know, we're not sure where she fits. She's kind of willing to freelance and fight wherever she can get a title shot. Raquel Pennington has looked good, but she's coming off shoulder surgery. Sarah McMahon has looked good, but Amanda Nunes already ran through her pretty quickly. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. Really curious to see if maybe they don't dip back into the Invicta FC pool and sort of see if there's some talent to mine from there again as well.
Let's go to the co-main event, a fight that I think that many are excited, almost as the people's main event, so to speak. But the fight between Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker, Whittaker being a fighter who is just, you know, one of these guys that just kind of like, he plods along. And if you look at his track record, the past couple of years, just he goes up against guys that people are like, I don't know if he can win this one, but we'll see what happens. And he wins convincingly. And then he does it again and does it again, does it again. Now he's up there against a physical beast in Yoel Romero. The talk all week has been how much of a specimen this 38, 39-year-old is. And just this interim middleweight title fight. And I think in both cases, you know, a lot of people assuming that the winner is just going to run through Michael Bisping. And that Michael Bisping is kind of hiding from these guys trying to get to GSP and that whole sideline. But this fight in general, Yoel Romero against Robert Whittaker, this is a, you know, it's so, you could be like, okay, yeah, Romero's in this great run. He's definitely going to win. And then you kind of can look over Robert Whittaker and be like, look who he's beating. This guy. It's been impressive. Every time someone's counting him out, all of a sudden he throws a right hand and all of a sudden that changes. This is, to me, I mean, I don't know what we're going to get out of this fight, but I'm so intrigued at what's going to happen because there's just these two guys that are just, this is why we watch the sport, is these two guys going in there, settling it over five rounds, and we're going to have an interim middleweight champion at the end of the night. This is a fascinating stuff. I can't wait for it.
I agree 100%. No disrespect to Michael Bisping. This is the best middleweight fight the UFC could make right now. Michael will be very well served to continue pushing for that GSP fight, because if I were him, I wouldn't want to share the cage with either of these guys. He was supposed to fight Robert Whittaker a couple years back, this is 193, got an elbow injury, then that led to him being the middleweight champ less than a year later. It's crazy to think about sort of where their two careers may have gone if that fight happened. Whittaker, to me, feels very much like kind of the next Max Holloway. And what you said about the, like, every fight he's in, he gets to that guy that you're like, well, maybe this is the test. Maybe this is the guy that gives him trouble. And he goes out and he wins. And we don't know how good he can be. We don't know where that ceiling sits yet. And guys like that are always intriguing to me. Not to take anything away from Yoel Romero, who is absolutely a physical specimen at 40. You see that workout and you see the shape he's in, and it's insane. But this is such an intriguing fight to me because Romero has been kind of a slow starter, a guy that'll get behind on the cards, but has the athleticism and explosiveness to just pull out a victory whenever. But Whittaker's that guy that's just, you know, he's going to keep moving. He's going to stick that jab in your face. He's going to keep working. He has great takedown defense. This is a fight that I can see going any number of ways, and I just can't wait to sit down and watch it tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's just one of these, again, this is why we watch this stuff. This is why we invest all the time. We slog through Fight Pass shows and Tough 25 and just all these different shows. Like, we get to this point where it's like, these two guys, they're here, you know, and this is why I watch this. I'm fascinated. Go ahead.
And for me, it's why, you know, people tend to get salty when I say some of these things, but for me, it's why I watch every fight. It's why I watch every card and from the UFC. It's why I want to watch the prelims and why I care about, you know, the newcomers that are showing up and the first timers, the guys that had a great debut, because they're eventually going to turn out to be Robert Whittaker or Yoel Romero. Like, there weren't a lot of people tuning in when Yoel Romero fought Clifford Starks in his UFC debut. But if you saw it, you saw a dude flying knee somebody in the third round and had to sit back and go, hang on, who is this dude? Then you find out he's an Olympic silver medalist. Then you see that he's 36, but still just picking things up, and you wonder how good he can be. And 3-4 years later, here he is. And so to me, this is a fight where it's like, this is the payoff to that investment of having watched these guys progress up the rankings and paid attention to them. Yes, you could have gotten on board a couple fights ago for each of them as they've gotten in, like, main event and co-main event assignments, but this is a couple years in for a lot of people. And to see them get to this point, as you've said a couple of times, this is why I watch the sport, is to see these people progress and develop and see them continue to improve and get the opportunity to fight at the highest level and reach this point. It's awesome.
So we go a little bit further down the main card. And so there's two names here that are very interesting because I don't know where they're at in their divisions and at this point in their career. And we'll start with Fabricio Werdum. I was kind of walking my coming over here by we were out to lunch with my brother-in-law, sister-in-law here, and so we're kind of out to lunch. I'm just thinking about like UFC 213, and I'm thinking about Fabricio Werdum and the fact that he is fighting on Saturday night, and nobody's talked about him at all. Like it's almost like this: he is a former champion, a guy that is has beat Fedor, and is arguably he's in that conversation for one of the best heavyweights of all time. In terms of the list of wins he's put together and who he's fought against, and he goes into this Saturday night's fighting, second from the or fourth from the top when it comes to the pay per view. Sorry, after the opener against Alistair Overeem, which is a star in his own right, and it's almost like this is kind of a forgotten fight in a lot of ways. And this is a guy, it's almost a forgotten fighter at this stage. It's just, I don't know whether the quote unquote sea level Kane discussion completely just kind of, cut out his legs from under him. It's Fabricio Werdum at this point in his career. I'm really interested to see what he has for Alistair Overeem on Saturday. And also just, where he's at this point in his career. I think with all these heavyweights in their, mid to late 30s, there's this question of, how many more times can they go out there? And to me, like, the spotlight's on for Fabricio Werdum Saturday night.
Yeah, I had to double check and, had totally forgotten that he fought Travis Brown at UFC 203. I know it was supposed to be Ben Rothwell, but that fight just completely fell out of my memory as I was writing my predictions for tomorrow for the province. And that speaks to what you're saying. Like, this is a guy that entered last year as the heavyweight champion that, just a little over a year ago was the heavyweight champion. And then he ran face first into a right hand from Stipe Miocic and just disappeared. I think this is a huge fight for both guys. I think Overeem's always going to have a little bit more staying power because his name, because the exploits are there. We kind of think of him a little bit more as that violent finisher, as that knockout artist. But I think you're right. I think this is a huge moment for Fabricio Werdum, where he's got to show kind of where he fits. Because if you win this fight, you're right back in the title conversation. Like, I don't know if, I don't know when Stipe necessarily wants to come back, whether it's September for the pay-per-view show in Edmonton, which has a heavyweight fight on it already. So maybe that's a good place to do it. So you've got some backup for injury concerns, or whether you wait a little bit later in the year, maybe New York City in November. But I'm not sure who he fights. Obviously, Francis Ngannou and Junior Dos Santos have been paired off. So you would think the winner of this one would probably be that next contender. But at the same time, we're wondering if Fabricio Werdum has anything left and where is this guy at? So to me, this is go out and have a good performance. I'm really interested to see. I mean, I remember that Strikeforce fight against Overeem. I thought he was winning it on the feet, gave it away by wanting to play guard, by wanting to try to entice Overeem to come to the ground with him. I want to see if he's over that. I want to see if he's got the confidence to go in there and push the stand-up against Overeem and become a lot more technical, a lot more tactical than the guy he was back in those Strikeforce days when he was coming forward and just firing away, looking to take guys out right away. Because I think this is absolutely a winnable fight for Werdum, but I just don't know that the confidence and kind of the swagger that he had as he was working his way up the ladder to the title is there. And that's, as you've said, one of the really big things to look for this weekend.
So since that Strikeforce loss to Overeem just mentioned, wins have come against Roy Nelson, Mike Russo, Big Nog, Travis Brown, Mark Hunt, Cain Velasquez, and Travis Brown again. But that's a span of over, the last 5 years almost? And you mentioned the long layoff, and he's going to be 40 years old in about 3 weeks. And at some point, age catches up to everyone, including Tom Brady at some point, but that's going to be at age like 50 or something like that. But, you know, for Rishi Verdum, you know, guy, there's just, I am so intrigued as far as what he has left. And for someone like Overeem, you know, he had that title loss to Miocic but he's still hanging around that upper level in that if he, you know, if he has a impressive win here against Verdum, maybe picks up another, another impressive victory in another fight against a top contender, you know, he could be right back in that mix. And the big question this is, where is Cain Velasquez? Where is his health at? Where is he? Because they would love to make that Miocic-Velasquez fight, I suppose, at some point. But can you trust that Cain's going to be able to make it to that fight and be able to challenge? And if he wins, what's going to happen after that? So the upper ranks of heavyweight, right. You know, Miocic has been a nice, you know, for once in heavyweight, it's been a nice continual story. He's won, he's defended, he's won, he's defended. And, you know, I think it's actually kind of nice to have a heavyweight, but there's just a lot of like question marks up and down that top 10 for heavyweights. Very interesting what's going to happen Saturday.
Yeah. Velasquez is that white whale, because if he's healthy, which is a huge if, then that changes things. That makes it a little more interesting, because you look at, you know, the top four contenders right now. Stipe Miocic has beaten three of them already, and the one that isn't there is Cain, and we don't know where he's at. Then you've got Ngannou. Then you've got Mark Hunt, who he's already defeated. Then you've got Derek Lewis, where it feels like there's a bit of a drop-off. I mean, a guy that you mentioned just from kind of Verdum's roll call of victories, Travis Brown was a guy that we thought for a while was maybe going to be a contender. He's completely fallen off. He's in a fight for your spot roster fight this weekend against Alexei Oleinik. I mean, heavyweight's in a weird place. I like that they're not rushing Francis Ngannou into a title shot. I think the fight with Dos Santos is the right level for him. I think it might be a little quick for JDS, but I'm not the matchmakers. But you're right. I think this is a very pivotal fight for both guys. If Overeem can go out and look really good, get a first or second round stoppage here, I think they maybe give him that next title shot, just because he had that moment in the fight with Stipe in Cleveland where he did have him rocked. He did kind of look to get that finish. It didn't come. But he showed well in that fight, even though it still ended in the first round. So a lot hinging on this one.
Yeah. And you mentioned Francis Ngannou. I think he's this very, I agree completely. I'm glad they didn't rush him into a title shot. I think if he beats JDS, I think there's a obvious story there for him, and obviously a case there for him to make to get a title shot. And I think he's a guy that you build it up right. I think Miocic versus Ngannou, I think placed right with a good card around it, I think that's a huge event. I just, if they build it right, you can kind of just see it. So I'm really excited to see that. One other guy on this card, kind of rounding out the main card, is I have questions about Anthony Pettis, a former UFC champion, a guy that was a superstar at one point, the man on the Wheaties box, and a guy that we thought was going to be, at this point, if we talked a couple of years ago, we'd be saying, yeah, this guy's going to be a megastar here in the next couple of years. He's going to be up at this level, the McGregor level almost, right? Just a guy that, he's a good-looking guy, great fighter, just has everything. And now we sit here, he's opening up a UFC pay-per-view against Jim Miller, going back to lightweight after a light run at 145. You know, he's a I don't know what to make of Anthony Pettis these days, Spencer. What do we have with him? What do we know? Do we know anything here, sitting here in July 2017? What do we know about Anthony Pettis?
I am with you 100%. You think back to UFC 185, and as you said, it's the Wheaties box. It's, you know, that promotional season was tagged as welcome to the show. Mm-hmm. He is Showtime. That wasn't just coincidence. He was front and center on that poster. He was the guy that was going to be one of the cornerstones for this company, and it has just been ugly since. Yes, he got the win over Charles Oliveira. That was out here in Vancouver. I was at that fight. It wasn't as pretty as it looks on his Wikipedia page, being that lone green marked the sea of pink losses. There were moments where he looked bad. Those cuts to featherweight were terrible for him. I'm glad he's back up at lightweight, but who knows what kind of impact that has had on his body. I know he made weight and we're good to go for this weekend, but it almost feels like he lost that confidence. A lot of what made Anthony Pettis so good for so long was he just walked in there with that swagger and with that, I'm going to come forward and I'm going to hit you with something and I'm going to do crazy inventive stuff and you're not going to have an answer for it. And then as soon as he started getting bullied, he didn't have any, there's no plan B, there's no follow-up, there's no comeback from that. And it made him hesitant to me, and it made him sort of a little bit gun-shy. And we saw that against Max. We saw that in his two fights that he tried to get back into the picture at lightweight before going down. And this to me is like, Miller's a dude that nobody necessarily thinks of as elite lightweight. But he's got the most fights tied for the most fights in UFC history when he steps stage this weekend at 27. So the most fights in lightweight history, and just a consummate pro who is good absolutely everywhere and is tough as hell. So this to me could very easily be a second straight loss, fourth straight loss at lightweight for Anthony Pettis. And we could jump back on this podcast next week and be like, now what the hell do you do with them? Because yeah. I think that's where he's at. It's just, you're right. We don't know what to expect from him. Could he go out and do something bonkers like we've seen from him in the past? Absolutely. But while that used to be the thing that we were like, Anthony Pettis will probably do something crazy, now it feels like Anthony Pettis is going to be gun shy and I don't think he can get the job done. And that's really crazy to think 2 years after he was positioned as the guy to watch.
So you look at this run. So this run, this was from October 2011 to December 2014, all UFC. Jeremy Stephens, victory. Joe Lauzon, victory. Donald Cerrone, victory. Benson, and so actually, I should tell you how he won. So Jeremy Stephens, split decision win. Joe Lauzon, first round KO. Donald Cerrone, first round TKO win. Benson Henderson, first round submission win. Gilbert Melendez, second round submission win. If you went over that, you'd be like, wow, that, I mean, that was a, yep. Just like the annals of the sport. I mean, that's a huge run. And then you go the five fights after that, a loss against Rafael Dos Anjos, a loss against Eddie Alvarez, a loss against Edson Barboza, the victory mentioned against Charles Oliveira at featherweight, and the loss against Max Holloway at featherweight, technically at featherweight, even though he missed weight. That was supposed to be that the interim featherweight title fight, lost, missed weight completely, lost by TKO, and came in 148 pounds, and just not a good show back in December. So, yeah, it is – and he, you know, age-wise, he's still – you know, he's 30 years old, so it's not like he's a guy we're talking about Verdum, where he's that much older and just, you know, it's kind of closer to the end. But you just, I have no idea what he has left. I have no idea. I'm just completely baffled at what to make. And Jim Miller is a guy. It's going to be, as you alluded to, it's a tough guy to kind of figure things out with, right? Because he is the definition of a grizzled vet. He has fought a who's who of people on the way up, on the way down. And he is, he's still at this age. He's still as game as they come. And he could just dominate Pettis for three rounds. Pettis could knock him out with a head kick in the first. I have no idea what to make of this fight. And I think that's what makes it so intriguing to open up the pay-per-view.
Yeah. As you said, any number of things can happen. You go through that list of performances for Pettis on his way up to and in winning and defending the title. And it was, you know, the Joe Lauzon finish in Japan is knockout of the night. The cowboy body kick is knockout of the night. Then he submits Ben to win the title. Then he chokes out Gilbert Melendez, and in hindsight, Gil kind of laid the blueprint for how to beat him because he won that first round. He put him on the cage, didn't give him a lot of space. And then he was doing the same to start the second. He just left his neck exposed. And Anthony Pettis, for all of his flashy offense and striking, has a really good submission game that we don't talk about enough. But it's crazy to think in the span of 2 years how far this guy has fallen. Is it just you know, competition and you got to get your head right? Is it 10 years in the game and he's just not as motivated anymore and he's not as focused? Jim Miller's a dude you don't want to share the cage with when you're not focused. So this one should be entertaining and fun to kick off the main card, but it'll also be, to me, I think it's going to be really declarative of where Anthony Pettis is at in his career.
Looking at the rest of the card, anything stand out? Any fighters of interest, fights of interest on the rest of the show?
I mean, Travis Brown is still always interesting to me because I, like, another guy kind of, you know, not quite, never got to that point that Anthony Pettis was at, but, you know, expected big things from him. Thought this was a guy that's going to be a contender, and it has just gone so sideways in the last bunch of fights for him. Enters this one having lost three in a row, four of his last five of his last seven. Like, no matter how far back you go, it just kind of keeps getting worse. And so if he can't get right here, the UFC's kind of hesitant to let go of heavyweights because we know Bellator will scoop them up if they want to keep fighting, as we saw with Matt Mitrione very recently getting a prominent push against Fedor. But that's one to look out for to me. Gerald Meerschaert has looked really good in his first two appearances. He gets a huge step up in competition against Thiago Santos. I want to see that. And Rob Font is a dude up from your sort of neck of the woods, the New England area now, who has looked very good. His only loss in the UFC is to John Lineker. He went the distance with him in Brazil, a guy that's a little bit slept on and underrated at bantamweight. He closes out the fight pass portion in a good fight, in a fight that I think should be pretty entertaining, a good stand-up battle against Douglas Silva de Andrade. So those would be my three guys.
Yep, I would be on board with that, and I think hopefully we get some interesting stuff going on. Let me ask you this final question. Out of all the fights coming up Friday, Saturday night, what are we going to be talking about the most on Monday morning?
Ooh, I think we're going to be talking about the champions coming out of this. I think that's just sort of always where we're going to gravitate, where we're going to focus. I think whatever happens tonight, Friday night, whether it's Justin Gaethje getting his first loss or showing that he's a contender at lightweight, is going to get some run. But I think we'll be focused on those two final fights at UFC 215 and talking about the winners and losers and what comes next for them. And I hope we get two really entertaining fights and sort of set the stage for a very interesting second year in two divisions that are, as we talked about, pretty entertaining right now and pretty interesting.
Yep. I think my story, I think going into Monday is going to be the winner of the Romero Whitaker fight. I think we're going to be talking a lot about on Monday. I think that people will be so excited coming out of that fight. My hope is that it'll be so exciting coming out of the fight that they are talking about, we don't want to see GSP versus Bisping. We don't want to see the winner of this, of Romero or either Whitaker versus Bisping, and we want it in the fall. So hopefully that will happen. Very interesting. International Fight Week is here, and no shortage of events has been happening in the past. And so much stuff has had in the past couple of weeks. We barely have time to kind of collect ourselves and think about this weekend. But we are here. We're on the doorstep, and we're very happy to have Spencer Kreit join us. And before we let you go, we'll throw you the microphone, as we always like to do. Give you a chance to promote where people can read your stuff, follow you on social media. And as always, the floor is yours.
I greatly appreciate it. It's great to get back on with you and catch up and do this. People can check out my work at provincesports.com/MMA. Everything is available on Twitter as well, at Spencer Kite, KYTE on the last name. That's about it. Just there's no rest for the wicked, right? We get through these two cards, and then we've got the debut of Dana White's Tuesday night Contender Series coming next week. Then we've got another event and another event and another event. So should be plenty to talk about. Should be plenty of good fights to enjoy. And like I said, man, it's always a pleasure getting to catch up and talk fights with you.
Same here. And looking forward to the rest of the summer happening. Yeah, Tuesday night we have all of a sudden every Tuesday night we have five new fights coming up. So as if we didn't have enough in our schedules, we have 10 new fighters, men and women, to try to get to know the names of. And my hope is that they'll mix that show up with with some veterans and some prospects and kind of make it interesting and all that. But I'm very interested to see where that Tuesday night fight series comes out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I actually wrote up the preview for it for UFC.com. I will be covering those fights for UFC.com. Oh. So my Tuesdays for the next 6 weeks are booked. I will be all the way invested in those fights. I mean, looking at them, it really is kind of what we've always wanted to see from the UFC, their own almost homegrown kind of minor league. There are some very good prospects. There are a couple of guys that have had a cup of coffee in the UFC, like Joby Sanchez and Kurt Hollebaugh, get a chance this week. There's some good guys that haven't had a chance yet, getting a shot later this year, like Nick Urso, who trains at Jackson Wink, and has been around for a long, long time. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and I have high hopes for it, but we'll see.
Well, we'll all hold hands together, and hopefully those fights are good. So Spencer Kite, thanks so much for returning back to Josh Hanks' Punch-Out, and have a great rest of your summer, man.
Appreciate it, buddy. You too. All the best.
All right. Big thanks to Spencer Kite for dropping by. You can follow him on Twitter. Read his work in UFC.com. And obviously you can follow and read Paul Fontaine's work as well and go back and listen to that show previewing Tough 25 if you want to get the full preview of this double shot weekend happening on Friday and Saturday in the UFC. So I've done a lot of talking over the last day or so. You're probably sick of hearing me. So I'm going to let you have the rest of your weekend and just enjoy the fight. So big thanks to Spencer Kite. Thanks to all of you for listening. And we'll talk to you again hopefully next week. This has been Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.